The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the Internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Well, good morning. My name is Karen Moore, and this presentation is Latin Oratory Ancient Art for Modern Times, so make sure you're in the right room. I will be using an outline in the program, which is on page 104. I am going old school this morning. I will not be using a PowerPoint. I know that might be shocking, but I figure, you know, dead ancient language and all, we could go without the technology or with minimal technology today. I do have a handout that has been passed out in the back. If you do not get a copy, please look on with a neighbor, share, and email me. My email address is in the program. It's kmoore@gracetx.org, and I would be more than happy to email you a PDF copy of the handout from this workshop today. Okay, well, let me open in prayer for us, and then we will get started. Lord, we thank you so much for this wonderful time to come together as fellow colleagues, as fellow missionaries in this calling to reach out to this next generation, to train them up and to equip them for the purposes that you have designed for them, to find and identify within them talents and skills and abilities to help them hone those, that they can be young men and women who will represent you, who will honor you in all that they say and in all that they do. In the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen. Well, good morning. As I said, this is Latin Oratory Ancient Art for Modern Times. And the purpose of this practicum is really to argue for and provide for an application of the study of rhetoric, specifically into Latin classes and using Latin orations. So as such, I'd like to start with a quick look at rhetoric, particularly the five canons of rhetoric. I'm looking at a passage from Cicero's Ad Herennium in Book 3, and he talks about the five canons of rhetoric in this work. The first one is invention, which is finding ways to persuade on a topic. The second one is arrangement, putting together the structure of a coherent argument. The third canon is style, presenting the argument in a manner that stirs emotion. The fourth canon is memory. And typically when we think of memory, we think of memorizing something, but he actually defines memory as being able to speak without having to prepare or memorize a speech. Obviously, you do have to do some basic memorizing in order to do that. It's practicing over and over again, memorizing styles, memorizing tools, so that you have those in your data bank and are able to pull those tools out as you speak and persuade an audience. And the last canon is delivery, making effective use of voice, gesture, etc. I want to look particularly at memory today. And I'm going to read a translation by Harry Kaplan from the Loeb 1954 edition, where Cicero is speaking specifically on memory. He says, "There are then two kinds of memory, one natural and the other the product of art. The natural memory is that memory which is embedded in our minds, born simultaneously with thought. The artificial memory," and when he says artificial memory, Cicero is actually using the same word as he used in the first sense, the part of art, artificiosa, which doesn't mean art so much in the sense of design, artistry, artistic, visual arts, but the word basically means skill. And those of you who are Latin teachers here are familiar with that. It's a skill. So when he talks about the artificial memory, he talks about the memory that has been trained by skill, not something that's a natural talent. The artificial memory is that memory which is strengthened by a kind of training and system of discipline. But just as in everything else, the merit of natural excellence often rivals acquired learning. And art, or skill, in its turn reinforces and develops the natural advantages. So does it happen in this instance. He goes on to say later that thus the natural memory must be strengthened by discipline, by training, so as to become exceptional. And on the other hand, this memory provided by discipline also requires natural ability. So we want to have natural ability. We want to hone it by discipline, by practice. Now, in my mind, sadly, these last two canons, particularly the memory, specifically the memory and the delivery, are neglected more so in our upper school. In the grammar school, we see a lot of work with memory. And the kids are just absolutely darling, right? I mean, they can sit there and pick their nose in their wedge, and they still just look absolutely adorable as they recite scripture and catechism and everything else. They have the cute factor going for them. And as they come up into the upper school, they tend to almost think of that as, well, that was, they were so proud then, but now we're big kids. And that's a baby exercise. And I think all too often we kind of pull away from that memory, not really knowing how to encourage and how to change it, how to grow up the discipline. And so one of the arguments I really want to make today is that we need to be training memory within our students in the upper school. This does not need to stop. So the canons neglected. As I said, these last two canons, memory and delivery, I think they're more neglected in the upper school. I think in some situations that is because we apply rhetoric more to writing than to speaking. In the rhetoric school, as we study talking rhetoric, we're looking at speeches, we're writing speeches, and we do get up and we practice the speeches. The senior thesis involves a lot of research, a lot of writing, but it's only the last portion that really is applied to the speaking and the delivery. And that is all wonderful and good, and they need to learn all of that, but I would argue for more study of memory and delivery of excellent orations. So how do we restore memory and delivery to their proper place? In 2012, I attended the Society for Classical Learning Conference in Charleston, and Susan Weiss Bauer gave a plenary on the arrangement in writing, and it was excellent. She really talked about the labor of invention and arrangement as it applies to writing. And as I was listening, it really resonated with me that this was could be applied to speaking also. But let me first talk a little bit about what she said. She talked about the labor involved in asking a student to create a composition, something that for some of us is just more natural. But she talked about how you first have to formulate an idea, then how to articulate the idea, then how to write it on a page, how to include the grammar, and how to give it a nice style. That's quite a few steps, which can be overwhelming. So she was arguing a lot for an imitation in writing where you give students an idea, you give them a form, you give them a framework so they can really hone in on the final styles of arranging and style in their writing. And I thought this really dovetails well with what I'm doing with rhetoric in my Latin classes, because what I'm doing is I'm giving them the masters of oratory, the masters of poetry. They're looking at Cicero, they're looking at Virgil in the original language. So they're studying the masters of invention and arrangement and style in depth because it's not their native tongue. And then they are mimicking it, they're reproducing it. So they can really hone in on developing those skills of memory and delivery while also having a detailed study of the invention and the arrangement and the style of a master. So there's kind of my argument for applying rhetoric outside of the rhetoric class. This can be done very well with your literature classes, too. Something like the St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V would be an excellent topic to have them, again, study a masterful style and produce the arrangement delivery on their own and focus on those. I, however, am a classicist, as are many of you, and so our heart and our passion is to see the love of Latin literature come alive. But again, these are the great texts. Where did Shakespeare find his muse? Ovid and Virgil, right? Who did Augustine study? These great masters studied Cicero and studied Virgil, so I think that we should too. So what I would like to spend the remainder of this time talking about is a specific lesson plan, and I'm providing you a lesson plan and a rubric for a project that I call the Oratory Project. This was birthed out of my involvement with the Junior Classical League. It is an extracurricular organization that promotes the study of classics in grades 6 through 12. There's also a senior classical league for college-level students. One of the competitions in this is an oratory competition. Now, having been a participant in the junior classical league, I was very aware of it. But then becoming a classical teacher, I thought, wow, this really supports what we're trying to do in teaching our students excellent rhetoric, the art of speaking. So for my oratory project, I use resources from the JCL. And if you look at your oratory project lesson plan, you will see that website at the very top, njcl.org. Now, that is not to say that this is the only place you should find such resources. You could certainly use the Vulgate and Ghost of Paul's speech in Acts. There are certain Sermon on the Mount. Who better to imitate than Christ? You could do that in Latin, or you could do it in English, or, hey, you could go do it in Greek. It would be fantastic. So there are many, many resources, but here's an easy place for you to go and find something that is age-appropriate. Even if you don't want to participate with JCL competition, the resources are free and available on the website. So I'm giving you directions in Part A. I won't read those, but how to find and locate the passages. There are two types of passages available on this website for NJCL. One of them is the oratory, which is what I will focus on today. Oratory are all snippets of orations from Cicero, Caesar, Pliny, and others. There's also dramatic interpretation components. At the younger levels, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, they tend to be based on adaptations of myths. But as they grow and become to the advanced level, they will be passages from Ovid's Metamorphoses or Virgil's Aeneid, dactylic hexameter, and they do have to recite the poetry with the dactylic hexameter. Not obvious, but noticeably the style is there. I did not have one of my poetesses today. She was unable to come, so we will focus on oratory. You'll notice, too, that there are different grade levels. I actually started this project in 6th grade, and that would be the level 1, half 1, and then we go on up each year. The passages get a little bit longer, a little bit more challenging as their Latin abilities progress. So how do I approach this? I've taken my passage, I've identified which one I want to do. The first thing that I do is I have them translate the passage. Now, if you go to the site, they will give you the translation. So I use my Xerox machine, and I make copies that do not have the translation. And the reason I do that is because I want the students to know what every single word means. If you're going to say it, you need to know what you're saying, and don't take somebody else's word for what you're saying. It also helps them to better understand. They know what each word is. Where should I put emphasis? And this is one of the excellent things about slowing this process down by using a Latin passage instead of an English one. English just rolls off their tongue. They've got that. If it's Latin, they slow them down a little bit, and they have to think about the word choice, the arrangement, and the style of the author, exactly what I want them studying in a master orator. And then they have to decide, what word should I emphasize? What tone should I use? What expression should I use? So the first goal is to translate the entire passage, and I take that up, and that's usually one grade. I grade the translation. Then I will hand out to them another copy, and this copy you also see in your packet. It has a 2007 NJCL at the top. The translation is at the bottom, and I do that so they can reference it as they practice and begin memorizing it, but I ask them to mark the syllabication and accent of each word. I want to make sure they know how to properly pronounce each Latin word. Now, I know that there are some discussions on classical versus ecclesiastical, and, you know, I'm in Texas. We pronounce things differently than my husband in Vermont does, and we have arguments over guacamole and guacamole all the time. It can really get kind of messy. But that's not the point. The point is to make sure that they're understanding what is excellent pronunciation and enunciation of the passage. And, again, how are you going to pronounce this word, making sure it's clear? This also forces them to slow down. And I keep telling them that. You must slow down. So I'll ask them to mark this up. Most textbooks, if you're not familiar with syllabification and accent of words, will have a unit on this. I'm the author of the Latin Alive series downstairs. If you haven't seen a sample of that, I can show it to you in the books we have. I know Introduction to Latin by Schelmerdine has it. I believe Wheelock has it. I'm not sure about Cambridge and Orberg and those. I would imagine it might. But if your book doesn't have it, come talk to me and I'll show you where that is. So that's the second phase. Learning how to pronounce the passage. Making sure we can pronounce, and enunciate correctly. And they will turn that in for a second grade. Then the next step is to memorize the passage. I generally give the students 2 weeks because we are doing other lessons. I don't completely stop the entire Latin universe for this project. You certainly could if you wanted to, depending upon your time frame. I give them 2 weeks just to memorize it. And so I'm not looking for any dramatization. I just want to know that you know every single word in this passage. And I find this really helps them through this process. Because if I just say, I want you to memorize a dramatic flair, blah, 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 go, especially for the little ones in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, that can be intimidating. So the first goal is just get it memorized. A lot of times, if we're all doing the same passage in class, you could even start class each day by reciting one line and then go on the next week or the next day recite 2 lines, the next day recite 3 lines. So just memorize it. And then I'll have them come up to me in a corner in my room while everybody else is working, and I'll have them recite to me. And I'm just, again, checking to make sure every word is there. If they're not pronouncing it quite right, I'll give them a little pointer, but I don't usually take points off because I'm really trying to help them walk through baby step this. So that's after about 2 weeks. Once everybody has it memorized, then we go back and we discuss again. We'll have ultimate class on this. Let's talk about what Cicero is saying in this passage. What is his attitude? Is he happy? I don't usually see Cicero write with a really jolly, happy demeanor, but could be. Is he angry? Is he trying to tear someone up? Probably. We did one with Queen Elizabeth where she was just absolutely sassy, putting this little uppity ambassador in his place. It was great. I had a student say, I had no idea Latin had so much sass to it. So trying to embody the idea of the orator, right? How are you going to personify, embody? What is he trying to say? What is his attitude? How are you going to do that? What are you going to emphasize? So we'll spend a day in class talking through that. We might even take turns reading a line just to help break ice, help them feel comfortable, encourage them in that. And then I'll give them about another week where they have to come back and they do a recitation for me in front of the class, and I grade their presentation. Now, with the younger ones in 6th and 7th grade, the first time that they do this project, I might even do this in a dress rehearsal class and then a formal class. So in other words, one class, everybody does it, and I don't grade it. I just critique them and give them pointers. And then they'll come back a day or two later, and they'll do it for the grade. And I think that's really helpful because I'll tell you that when I first start this project, especially with the 6th and 7th graders, their eyes pop. I have to do what? I have to memorize the Latin. I have to speak in front of my friends. It throws them. In fact, I had one young man, broke my heart. He got up there, started trembling, and started to tear up. And he ended up sitting down, but then the next day he came back and he said, Mrs. Moore, I want to go first. Can I just go first? And he knocked it out of the park, and he's been fantastic ever since. They just have to get over that hurdle. And so make it a safe environment to get over that hurdle. The last sheet I've given you is the oratory presentation critique sheet. This is the sheet I use to grade. It's based off of the judge's scoring guide for the NJCL competition. I do not require all of my students to attend the competition. I make that optional because just to stand up in front of the class and recite it is a huge victory. And it's not for everybody. So usually 2 or 3 of them will go and compete. And for that purpose, I do want to make my scoring guide be something similar to what they would expect for that. And I find this to be a pretty good breakdown. Memorization, 25 points, just that, did they get every word? Character portrayal and depth, it's another 20 points. And again, that's just their interpretation of the passage, their embodiment of the author. Pronunciation, you see, enunciation. Voice control and eye contact. Sometimes your voice, when you get nervous, gets real shaky. So are you speaking clearly? Can I hear you? Are you maintaining that steady calm? Eye contact. We talk about tricks, about looking just above somebody's head or picking a spot on the back of the wall. Or if your friend is going to be there as a prompter, you know, make eye contact with somebody you know that you're comfortable with, that you know, okay, they like me. I'll be okay. She's a safe person. She's a safe person. So, one next to her, maybe not. No, just kidding. They're both my friends. Natural gestures and appropriate movements. Okay? Romans didn't talk with just their voice. Italians still, they use their hands or body language. I do too. So what is appropriate to what you're saying? Are you addressing someone? How are you interpreting the passage with your full body? Speak not just with your voice, but with your face, with your eyes, with your tone, with your arms, with your gestures. For oratory, that typically involves standing in one place, maybe moving a little bit. For the dramatic interpretation poetry, they tend to move a lot more. Phraseology. That sounds a little bit funny at first, but as you get into it, you really think about, where am I breaking? Where am I breathing? What things am I grouping together for emphasis? And making sure that I'm phrasing things in a manner that, again, communicates the feeling, the interpretation, the message that the orator is trying to present. And then at the bottom, you notice I have a big blank space for general assessment. One thing I very much appreciate about the judges at these contests, typically they are professors from the university. I'm in the Austin area, so UT Classics, Baylor Classics, are excellent about sending their profs to come down. They are the nicest men and women, and they're really there to coach these kids. And so the assessment period is a period for what you did well in and how you can improve. And I really try to mimic that here because I think that's very beneficial. Everybody has room for improvement, but we also need to hear what we've done well. Even if the only thing they did well is that they got it memorized, great job on the memorization. You got every word. Good job. You know, so really look for those things that you can encourage them in, but then also give them pointers. Again, for me, this is a project that we do each year in class. So students start with me in sixth grade. Typically, they will, as far as our Latin program is required, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth. And then past that, if they continue on with me, they'll continue to do it, but then it's more optional. And some of them have gone on. Well, area, state, national level, we pretty regularly rank in the top five and do very well. And I think a lot of that is because of the training these kids get in the grammar school with the memory, with the challenging literature. They just do very well. And so this project is one that not only has it been a fun competition, but even in our classes, it has just been an excellent tool for taking these skills they've learned in the grammar school in terms of memory and speaking and really helping to grow them up before they get to that senior thesis capstone and really help them to refine that memory and delivery while also intimately studying the invention, the arrangement, and the style. Well, hopefully that's helpful. But I like visual aids, and my technology doesn't work well. But the best visual aid I can give to you is honestly to show you this in action. So I have invited Bryce, now they were actually very willing participants, two of my students, one a current student, one a graduate, a former student, to come and share with you their, Madeline will share her performance piece, but then also to share with you from a student's perspective what this has done for them. So, Madeline, if you will come up first. Madeline is just finished her freshman year at Grace Academy. She'll be a sophomore next year. And she's going to present one of the several Ciceronian passages she's memorized. And she has, brag on a little bit, she has placed first at area and state, and she's also won high honors and recognition at the national conventions for this project. This summer, she's loving Latin so much that she's going to Orvieto with SEL's Travel Abroad program. So, Ms. Prentice.
Prem publicum, quirites, votamque omnium vestrum, bona, fortunas, conjuge liberosque vestros, atque hoc domicilium clarissimi imperii, fortunatissimam pulcheramamque urbem, hodierno die immortalium sumo erga vos amore, laboribus consilis periculis meis, conservatam vedetis, nam toti urbi templis delubris, tectis ac moenibus subjectus, prope iam ignis circumdatosque restinximus. Idemque gladios in rem publicam, districtus returimus mucronesque eorum, a jubilis vestris feiecimus.
That piece, and my apologies for not mentioning beforehand, is from Cicero's In Catilinam. It was from chapter 3. Now, I'm going to ask Madeline a few questions, and then I'm going to bring her up later so you can grill her. So if you have questions you'd like to ask, your grade is not based on this, though.
Getting better? Yeah.
No, you're a part-time gardener. You're good. Okay. So, Madeline, you've memorized a number of passages from Cicero and Caesar and others. Why did you choose this piece to present for us today?
I've always really enjoyed Cicero. Oh, okay. I've always really enjoyed Cicero. And another thing is, in this piece, this is the introduction to him trying to convince the people of Rome to prosecute Catiline. And throughout the piece, he uses a lot of subtlety and sarcasm. It's very beautifully done, and I've always enjoyed it. And always, I know I've worked on it for a very long time, so I know it really well.
That's good. Okay, how did you prepare this piece? We talked a little bit as a group, what we do in class. What did you do beyond that to prepare for this?
When I get home, I usually will memorize one line a day, and I go over that a bunch, and then the next day, I'll memorize another line but include the line before. So as the days get longer, it gets longer and longer, so on and so forth, then eventually, maybe in the course of a week or 2 weeks, depending on how long the passage is, I'll have the whole thing memorized.
Okay. How has this exercise benefited you as a student?
Overall memorization is a very key thing, especially in history or science. When I need to memorize a date or a fact, it just comes easier. As well as I'm much more interested in things than I never thought I would be interested in, because I get to go to conventions and meet people that are interested in Latin, and I like learning about the history and reading more passages where, one point in time, somebody handed me a Latin passage, I would have just looked at them with a blank stare.
Last question. What is the benefit of memorizing and performing Latin orations as opposed to an English one?
One of the things is it helps you understand English grammar better, not just Latin, because if you look at the two passages side by side, you see the similarities and the contrast. And also, it expands into so many fields because you see, if you don't know a word, you can look it up in a dictionary. And some of them, in science, we see words that are bones or animals that are in Latin, and we still use them today. So that's very interesting. And, yeah. So.
Okay, thank you. Okay, you'll have a seat on the front row. And then Ashton Murphy will come up in just a minute. At the end, I'm going to have Mal and Ashton up here at the end, so if you have any questions, you can ask them. Ashton Murphy studied Latin at Grace Academy in grades 4 through 12. She memorized, I don't even know how many orations, in 6 through 12 upper school. At that time, not only school assignments, but also competitive events. Ashton is currently studying classics at Rose College. Next year will be her senior year. And she's actually preparing to leave on Monday for Oxford. She's been given an award to pursue a topic of research for her honors project at Rose. And she's going to study the portrayal of women in Euripides' Medea in contrast to portrayal in modern video games. So she's leaving to go research that on Monday. So we just got her for this conference. So good. So I'm going to ask Ashton some similar questions, and then please feel free to think of and follow up with some of your own. How has this oratory project itself been beneficial for you?
The oratory project, can you all hear me? The oratory project, for me, has a lot of the same benefits that Latin has. Latin itself, I believe, makes you a more critical thinker. It enables you to really parse arguments, and the oratory project is sort of a more intense version of translating Latin. Translating Latin is only the first step, as Mrs. Moore said. And so, outside of that whole integration, there is a memorization aspect that it's so difficult to memorize in Latin compared to memorizing in English that even back in high school when I was doing these and when I was learning, I noticed myself really improving in my memorization of English. I was in the drama program, and I could memorize my lines much more quickly after I had done this project.
Okay, thank you. What techniques for memorization did you take with you after Grace Academy, and how have they been of use in your collegiate work?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really important to give yourself enough time, and that's extremely apparent when you're using a language that isn't your first language. But in particular, what I've taken with me is I would incorporate kinesthetic learning. And so I would memorize a line, and then I would get up and do something. I have a mini trampoline at home, and so I'd get up and repeat it to myself on my mini trampoline. And when I had the passage more or less memorized, I would go out on jogs around the neighborhood, repeating it over and over, and that really cemented it in my memory. And so learning that moving helps memorization has helped me, even in college, doing quizzes and that sort of thing.
Plus you sang great, right? What is the benefit of memorizing Latin orations, Cicero's work, and particularly, in particular, over English orations?
Well, I've already mentioned that it's harder, and so it helps you to memorize English because you have to be very mindful every step of the way. You have to be mindful of your enunciation, of your emphasis, of your gestures, and so Latin really helps with that. And as Madeline mentioned, it helps with etymologies. Cicero in particular, Cicero is so sassy. I love him. And he's just a master at using rhetorical devices, and so it becomes almost glaringly obvious when you translate Cicero. There's a line that I still remember from like 4 or 5 years ago. It's sed de te tu videris ego de me ipsa profitebor. And so when I was reading that, it became very apparent that he was just a master. And I used to memorize Latin passages for dramatic interpretation, which is either heavily adapted or it's someone now writing them. And so it was much easier for me to memorize the Latin oratory than the dramatic interpretation because it was a master who was writing them and delivering them.
Great. And he used rhetorical devices that would really impact a listener or a reader.
Mm-hmm.
That helps that. And then last question for you. How has this exercise impacted your other abilities, studies as a lifelong learner?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned that it really helps integrate memorization with other things. As we're learning more and more about the brain, we're learning that the same parts of the brain that you use memorization is the same part of the brain that helps you think deeply and think critically. And so it's so easy to just take your phone and look stuff up on Google and not memorize. And so we're learning, though, that that sort of harms our ability to think deeply. And so I just took the LSAT last month, and I really felt my Latin education helping me to parse arguments and to think deeply and to concentrate because it was something that I've been doing for years and years.
Thank you, Ashton. Something that Ashton and Madeline both mentioned that I wanted to touch on. In Cicero's Ad Herennium, he talks also about different skills of memory, different tools. And he talks a lot about images and using those. But he gets to a point where he says that he's talking about memorizing images in terms of remembering ideas and concepts. But then he goes on to say that he, like Levita Latotes, he does not disapprove of memorizing words. In fact, he says, he finds that, I believe that those who wish to do easy things without trouble and toil must previously have been trained in more difficult things. And the inclination that memorizing words as opposed to images, concepts, particularly words in a language that's not your own, is going to be more challenging. It is going to be more difficult. But if we want to do things easily in the future, we must first toil in more difficult things. And toil the point of attaining victory and accomplishment and building that confidence and that ability. So thank you very much for your time this morning. I want to take these last minutes, and we actually have a good few of them, to open up to question and answer. Whether you have a question for me pertaining to that project itself, looking over that lesson plan, or if you would like to ask Ashton or Madeline a question about their perspective as students. They haven't, well, Ashton's already graduated, so I have nothing on her. And they're free to answer as they choose. So, questions? She's asking if they're taking any other languages besides Latin. Yeah, go ahead. You need to step into the mic so that they can hear you.
Not at Grace, but I'm self-teaching. Actually, no, I take that back. I have a teacher, and I'm learning Japanese with a private teacher at We Meet at the Library, and it's fun, and definitely it helps. The languages are completely opposite. Asian languages have nothing on, like, they're so opposite, completely. But
the memorization always helps. You can learn the characters better, the way that it sounds, because you've learned Latin and it sounds so much different than English, in my opinion. So it does help. Learning a language is your first one, especially. There's a big hurdle that you get over because you've never done something. You've always spoken in your own tongue for forever. So it helps. And also one thing I wanted to add, the question of why it's important to learn things in Latin, not only in English, I thought of something is it really, really boosts your public speaking confidence because you've learned something in another language, an ancient language at that. So when you go up and you're learning something in English, you'd be like, I've done something in Latin and I did it well. So I know I can do something in English or in Latin, whichever one it is. And it just, it gives you, the more you do it, the more confident you get. So
Ashley, you want to address that?
Yeah, that's tough to follow up. But I took a few semesters of ancient Greek at Rhodes College, and I took Italian when I was studying abroad in Italy. So those are the other languages. And I'm hoping to learn Spanish.
How does this help you with learning a language?
Well, Latin is really what I have to do when I learn other languages is I have to look for their similarities to Latin. And so I actually, my major is basically Latin. It's classics with a concentration in Latin. And so sort of knowing how to parse things, and really with Italian, it was, we'd have to speak aloud in class, and I would sometimes accidentally slip into Latin because I just wouldn't know the words in Italian. And so I was able to make myself understood a lot by doing
that. Other questions? Yes, sir. Great, yes. Sure. So the question is, how do I work the oratory project into the course of the year, correct? Absolutely. Well, I usually don't start it in the first quarter. The first quarter is really all about reviewing and getting your routines down and so forth. So I usually start it in the second quarter. And again, I take it a step at a time. So I'll get to a good stopping point in the curriculum I'm using, whether that's the end of a unit or a chapter, or, you know, a good finishing point where I've done a test, and then I will bring in the translation. And as you heard with Madeline, hers, let's see, it's 7.5 lines. The ones for 6th and 7th graders, level 1, are even shorter. They're about 5 lines. So they're not terribly long. I'll even allow them to work in groups. Now, I will warn you that even on the 6th and 7th grade level, even though they will sometimes adapt Cicero or the orator of choice, it still might be a few complex constructions. So I would encourage the teacher to look over it in advance. And if there's a phrase you need to just gloss for them or tell them this is what this one means, do that. With Dramatic and Terp, they're much more readily adapted because they're using fictitious Latin, if you will, from there was an Alice in Wonderland one piece, or there's, you know, Daphne and Apollo, but it's not from Ovid, it's somebody wrote it in Latin. So those are usually more accessible. And then I just have to very carefully plot it out. So I might spend, take a break of 3 days to a week doing the translation and the syllabication and accent, that unit. And then after that, it's, ladies and gentlemen, you have 2 weeks to memorize this. And I go back to my regular lesson plan. Now, again, I might take the first 5 minutes of each class to recite as a group if we're all doing the same passage. I also tend to really try to bring in the reins on my homework load during that time period because I know that they're also doing memorization. And, in fact, a lot of times I'll give shortened assignments where I know they're going to have, those who work diligently will have an extra 5 to 10 minutes in class to look over it. I also give students the advice that you don't want to sit there for 30 minutes to try to memorize one line. Your brain doesn't just work well that way. Usually your first 5 minutes are good, and then your brain starts to kind of go into a passive mode. So I'll tell them, it's a good idea to do this. You know, Ashton talked about memorizing and getting up and exercising and then coming back. I've also told kids, you know, if you're Friday night and your family's watching a movie on TV, the commercial break, you don't need to buy a car and you don't need to buy Tide. Just look at your memorization piece for that 3 to 5 minute commercial break and then come back. So finding little places where they can go back and forth is helpful. So at that point in time, I'm back in my regular lesson plans, and I just set aside a day. This day is going to be memorization delivery day. This day, a week later, is going to be dramatic presentation day. And so I just plan that out as a project. Just like you would, you know, in science class, you'd block out time for a lab. This is our Latin lab, if you will, and we block out the time for it. Yes, I try to finish it in time in the second quarter. At times, honestly, second quarter is sometimes harder than Thanksgiving and Christmas. There are times when I have pushed the third quarter. Our competition is generally middle of February. So I personally like to do it second quarter to make sure those who want to go to competition have time to finish the project well, and then a few more weeks to even hone it further before going to competition. Yes, sir. This question is how many passages would I have them work through in a year? I do one in a year simply because of the time that it takes, and I have other things that I need to do in a Latin grammar class. I'm talking 6th, 7th, 8th grade. Now, in high school, when I get to a reading class where I don't have AP is difficult because you have a huge number of lines you have to get through if you're prepping for the test. But in my Latin literature class, which is a reading class, I can do shorter snippets of speeches, and I can do more. I have that flexibility. But even then, I don't do too terribly many. I'm really focusing on reading a lot. Yes, sir. And I'll come back over to you. Mm-hmm. So his question is, does the study of the Latin oratory increase their appreciation for Latin literature? Okay. So do y'all want to study Cicero more? Okay, so I'll let you answer.
Well, I have devoted my entire collegiate career to Latin.
It works!
It's a pretty good sign. My passages in particular, I think they were all Cicero, and it really did give me more of an appreciation for Cicero because it brings him alive. You think, especially when you're younger, these are like old white people, they're dead, why do I care? But in one of my passages, Catiline, I've read, is sitting on the front row and he's pointing at Catiline and asking, why have you not killed him yet? And so that was very fun to read that and to realize that Cicero has guts and he's very relevant.
I don't have much more than a yes because I'm not that far in high school yet, but I definitely, the option in the 10th grade that you have is you can either go with Greek or Latin, and I definitely want to continue with the Latin because I really do enjoy reading not only about Cicero, but there's other things in Latin that we got to read because we did Queen Elizabeth's speech, and that was really fun this year. And there's so many things that it's not just the ancient Romans that you can read in Latin because this language is everywhere, and we don't really see it every day. And it's really nice to realize that.
Yes, the Queen Elizabeth passage was, I think, a favorite this past year. We did some medieval, and I had a student comment to me, I had no idea Latin could have such sass to it. She was brilliant. Man, yes. Mm-hmm. Good question. The class period is 45 minutes, 5 days a week. And so you do have to take that into account as you're budgeting your time and planning out your year. Other questions? But I think you'll see, too, that about half of it is outside of classwork. Yes, sir. That's a good question. He's asking when to start Latin Alive 1, which is a textbook that I used. I started in 6th grade, but that's because our students have had Latin for Children in 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And even though it's a book 1 book, there is a lot more reading provided, and it goes much deeper in terms of grammatical concepts. And so it's a good year of quick review and intensive reading. For most, I would say you could start it in sixth. I know teachers who break it up over sixth and seventh grade, but I would probably recommend seventh grade on the whole. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Madeline just completed her ninth grade year. Madeline, come here. So tell the kind people some of the things that you read this year.
Okay. We did a lot.
I should say this year focused on medieval and neoclassical.
We did passages from Christopher Columbus, Queen Elizabeth. We did Martin Luther. June did the thing.
The Theses.
Theses, yes. That's the word I was looking for. We even do our own Latin passages sometimes. Like when after we finished Queen Elizabeth's speech, we did Vituperation on that in our own Latin, and then we read Phaedrus's fables, which was really fun. Trying to think of some other things because there was a lot, but that's kind of a brief.
Yeah, that's a good overview of what we did this year. We actually finished the year with Newton's Principia.
There we go.
His three laws of motion. Yes. It's the Latin Alive Reader. Yes, they're all in that, and if you come downstairs, I'll show you. But yes, so in ninth grade, I tend to focus on medieval neoclassical because they just completed their medieval studies. In eighth grade, they went to Roman medieval. And in ninth grade, they are reading modern, so it kind of helps with that transition, complements the transition of literature and humanities. Then in 10th grade, our students read ancient humanities again, in English translation. And so during that year, I can go back and do readings once again in Cicero and Caesar. Now, in the book series that I created, we put unadapted pieces of literature in the 7th and 8th grade text so that they're already exposed to Pliny and Cicero and Virgil and some of those guys. But you do the medieval neoclassical 9th and the go back to classical in 10th. Because I want them to really get a sense of the breadth and depth of Latin and how many different places it touched and how it kept going far beyond the fall of Rome. So, and a lot of compositions, too. They read Columbus's. Now, Columbus wrote it in Spanish, but it was published in Latin across the New World, his discovery of America. So we read a few passages from that, and then I had them go out on our campus and survey the land and write their own Latin description as if they were discoverers. So I would really like to do some imitation in writing, right? So study these authors, and then what about them can we take and play with?
I remember two other things that we did. We did a section from Magna Carta?
No.
We did a section from the Magna Carta, and then there was a passage of Luke in the Bible that was translated into Latin that we retranslated. So. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Great question. So her question is, if we have things come in 7th and 8th grade, how do we bring them in? One gateway is 6th grade, because we do go to Latin Alive Book 1. Even though our students have had Latin in 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade, we're starting back at square one. And so students who come in new, we have a very frank conversation with them that says, look, these other guys have a leg up on you. You can do this. But you're going to have to be disciplined. You're going to have to stay with us. A lot of times I'll even arrange for them and their teacher to have a once-a-week check-in for the first quarter, see how they're doing, and just keep an eye on them. But usually they do very, very well. The first quarter might be a little bit dicey for them. I shouldn't say dicey, but challenging. But they pretty quickly acclimate with the solid teaching that we do. We are actually implementing something new that I'm very excited about with 9th grade, and that is that we do require 2 years of classical language study in the high school or school of rhetoric. It can be Latin or it can be Greek. So a student coming into 9th grade, if they haven't had Latin, they can start with Greek 1, because I'm just a huge fan of both, and if you ask me which one's better, I'm going to have a really hard time answering you. So I'm really excited to see that pick up. If they come in 7th or 8th grade, then I usually end up doing a split-level class for that 1 or 2 years, which is a challenge, but we don't have huge numbers coming in at that time. If we ever get to that place, I might look into a dual track system in the School of Logic, but it's typically our students come in at 6, or they come in at high school, or they're down in the grammar school. And for those main points of entry, we have very easy transitions. Well, I shouldn't say very easy, but very doable transitions. Yes, Lacey? Disclaimer, Ashton's mom talking. Okay, so kind of restate the questions your mom just asked, but more
concise. Love you too, Mom. So Mom is referencing, I went into college, and I went into Greek 101. I had taken Latin all through high school, hadn't had a shred of Greek. And so we went in, and my teacher, bless his heart, was coming up with a new curriculum. And he was doing it as, like, week by week. Sometimes we would get passages at midnight the night before. And so it was very developmental. And he told us, don't use charts and don't memorize. We're going to sort of do an immersion program. And I did that for the first semester, and it just didn't work for me. I was like, all right, I'll trust you. I won't memorize anything. And then tests would come, and what am I supposed to do? I don't know anything. I haven't memorized it. And so for the next two semesters, I sort of went back to the basics, and I went back to what I had learned with oratory. And I was like, all right, I tried your approach. I gave it a good old college try, and I decided that memorizing was going to work better for me. And so the tools that I had learned through doing these oratory projects really helped me in those later semesters.
Now, when you say memorizing, what is it you were memorizing that helped?
Mm-hmm. Mostly endings were, that's something that I really needed to memorize.
Like noun, verb, paradigms, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I haven't taken any Greek since the fall of my freshman year, and so I'm very rusty, but I'm going to try to pick it back up again because I'm doing my Medea project, so
excellent.
Keep you updated this summer.
Okay. Other questions? Yes, sir. So the question was, with the dramatic interpretation project, I mentioned earlier, it's Virgil, it's Ovid, it's dactylic hexameter, and he says, are they stuck with dactylic hexameter? Because there are other wonderful examples of poetry. And I love reading Horace Catullus in my class, the G-rated, maybe PG-rated one. We're a classical Christian school, so we're going to be careful. Yes, they're stuck. Is a short answer. The reason, though, is very intentional, because these are high school students who are, by and large, studying Virgil's Aeneid for the AP exam. And so they're really helping reinforce that in-depth study of that particular poetic style. So that's the reason behind it. But yes. Now, that is not to stop you from giving them one of Catullus's wonderful Hindeca syllabic pieces. Did you? How did that work? Did they enjoy that?
I'll tell you what.
Okay. Sounds good. Yes, sir.
Would your former students kind of be warnings of the name of the curriculum?
Let's see. I don't know that he's published it. The man's name is Kenny Morrell.
Please. We didn't answer that one.
Oh,
I don't know.
Never mind. But
she'll give you the lowdown later.
Yeah. I'll give
you the lowdown. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
So in your last lecture, you talked about speaking poetry. How much spoken Latin are students doing about the course of Latin?
Oh, good question. So the question is, how much spoken Latin are we incorporating into our particular class? I very much like the golden mean approach. I do not pattern my classes after an immersion class, nor do I want to exclude speaking. My purpose, my goal in teaching Latin is not so that they become fluent enough to have a Latin conversation. My goal is that they are able to read the masters. And so I do believe very much in a parts-the-whole grammar program that teaches them the basics they can fall back on when they get to something rather complicated and they need those tools. At the same time, when I was in college, just a few years ago, I took an Italian class, and I picked up the reading and writing very quickly. Noticed that the oral took me considerably longer. And it really struck me in those years that, wow, there's really a different part of my brain I'm using to learn to speak a foreign language as opposed to just the reading, writing. And that really just can come up in a new way. So I really want to incorporate oral exercises into my classes. And so I do a lot of what I call colloquamur. When we read a passage, a lot of times I have them translate it. But when I have my students do an oral translation, they are never, you can ask them when I'm not around, never allowed to use their English translation. It cannot be out. I mean, it would just be bad if they had their English out. And so when we read aloud, we are reading the Latin. I will have them first read it in Latin before we discuss in English what the meaning might be. And then I always follow it up with what Ecce Romani refers to as Risponde Latine. So I do a question comprehension exercise. I'm speaking, asking them questions in Latin. They're responding in Latin. I've also, each year I charge myself to do more. I will often give not so much the grammar lesson, but grammar reviews in Latin. So I may have done a lesson in English, but the next day we come back to check our work, and I might ask things like, cuius est in porus? What tense is it in? And I train them to respond in a praesens imperfectum as opposed to present imperfect, or cuius est numeri, and they must respond singulariter, pluraliter. So I bring those things in as they reinforce. In the grammar school, we do fun things like teaching them how to ask to go to the bathroom in Latin. And they don't get to go unless they say it right. So that's an important one to learn. Or doing games like Mother May I and playing that all in Latin. Or I Spy type things. So I don't have an immersion class. I try to bring it in and I challenge myself to do more and more. So finding that little bit. And I do actually a lot of colloquial exercises I put into that Latin Alive book, too. Any other questions? All right, we've got 2 minutes left. All right, going on. If you have further questions, please feel free to come up and talk to us after the presentation. I will be at the Classical Academic Press booth, which is really towards the front of the vendor hall. And I'll be more than happy to talk with you further on this topic. Ash and Madeline won't be around too much longer, though, so if you have a question for them, you'll want to grab them soon. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope that this will be a blessing to you as you plan out your next year.
Which way do you want it? Horizontally or vertically?
Horizontal.
Horizontally. Vertically.
Horizontal.
Okay. Then I do I
Okay.
That's classical.
Right.
There really aren't that many differences between
them. We realized that we used the Latin for children, and we chose ecclesiastical, but the video of Christmas.
Well, and I am not dogmatic about it. I tell people, look at what you want to do.